morning, listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. As always, we're here to present a program that will help educate you, the dog-owning community, about all things dog. This morning, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Michael Dimm, a homeopathic veterinarian who practices in the South Jersey area. Dr. Dimm is one of 250 veterinarians in the United States trained in classical veterinary homeopathy. He's a presidential scholar, graduate from Cornell University with his VMD from the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Dimm is an active member of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy and the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association. He also offers progressive integrative conventional veterinary medicine, including vaccine alternatives, as well as topical and oral pesticide options for dogs and cats. Dr. Dimm and I will be discussing long-term health risks and benefits associated with spaying and neutering our dogs. Dr. Dimm has helped educate me on many things over the years, and I'm hoping that you'll be a better informed dog owner once you listen to him today. Before we talk to Dr. Dimm, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Dr. Dimm. Thank you so much for joining us in the doghouse today.
Good morning, Rainey. It's always great to be here.
It is wonderful to talk to you always. In recent years, both shelters and rescue organizations are performing pediatric spay and neuter surgeries as early as 8 weeks old. Can you tell us if there's any risks, serious risks, to these puppies in later life from being neutered or spayed at such a young age?
Well, that's very interesting, Rainey. Of course, for generations, we always kind of, as a standard of practice, sort of like that word that we've kind of been guilty of in traditional veterinary medicine, neutered and spayed animals at 6 months of age. And as you said, the spaying and neutering is now being done as early as 8 weeks of age. And for years, this information was never looked at. But in recent years, there's been an increasing body of scientific evidence, not just a philosophical argument, but a growing body of scientific evidence that there are health risks, individual health risks to individual animals, to the procedures of early spaying and neutering.
Would one of those health risks be orthopedic disorders or behavior disorders that you're aware of?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, one of the interesting things I found in you know, going over the literature that I've got over and trying to, you know, inform my clients about the most recent information to allow them to make an informed decision is that there is a tremendous increase in bone and orthopedic and certain types of joint disorders in animals being spayed and neutered at a young age. For example, Chris Zink, who's a veterinary colleague of ours with a specialty in canine sports, you know, actually wrote a little paper reviewing this information and actually, you know, citing some of the studies that, for example, one of the things that we see at a significant increase that was published in a, you know, in a clinical orthopedic journal, both internationally as well as in JAVMA here in this country back in 2004, was that animals and with dogs that were spayed or neutered before, a year of age had a significant increased risk, an increased risk of developing cruciate ligament ruptures of the knee, which is quite a common growing epidemic in canine medicine today, as well as having a higher incidence of hip dysplasia when they're neutered or spayed before 6 months of age. So, you know, the bone diseases certainly, you know, we're starting to see that. There's also been documented evidence by a colleague of ours over at Purdue that there's a significant increase in bone cancer and other types of cancer in animals that are neutered or spayed before a year of age. So this body of evidence and epidemiological studies just can't be ignored anymore.
Right. I'll tell you what I do see physically from mostly rescued puppies that, you know, are brought into the home and they start growing up and getting toward 4 and 5 months old. They're very leggy. Their legs are very long. They become much taller than their breed is commonly called for. What causes that extra long leg bone?
Well, I mean, there probably are hormonal factors in there. For example, Dr. Zink even discusses when animals are spayed or neutered at a young age that there is a change in the bone length, such as what you're describing, a lengthening or a thinning of it. And, you know, to ignore the fact that removing the sex hormones of an animal doesn't have an effect on bone and other types of health, including, as I know we'll get into, behavioral and other physiological problems, certainly, you know, again, can't be ignored. As a woman who is going through changes in menopause, certainly can relate to.
Right. I don't know if there's ever been a case cited of removing the sex organs of a child, a human child, male or female, but I would imagine it would have disastrous results.
Yes, absolutely. What happens is, like you mentioned earlier, when you remove those sex hormones, the bones do, you know, grow at an extra length, and that's why I think you're seeing those long, thin boned animals that you're seeing in your behavioral practice.
Right. I've read articles and listened to other veterinarians who state that neutering male dogs eliminates testicular cancer. It will reduce the risk of non-cancerous prostate disorders, and it will also reduce the risk of perianal fistulas. What are your thoughts regarding these possible benefits for dogs?
Well, those cited benefits you just mentioned are, you know, three of the few benefits, I will say, from an individual perspective dog in terms of, physical health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Non-neutered males, I may add also, tend not to wander or roam more, obviously, if there's a female in heat. So you have less likelihood of escaping out of the yard and that kind of thing if there's a female in heat in the neighborhood. So I'll add that to your list of, you know, three or four benefits. But as far as to go through those individual individual conditions, most of those non-cancerous prostate disorders are easily treated later on, whether it be with traditional neutering or whether it be holistic therapies like homeopathy and herbal therapies that are tremendously beneficial in treating prostate disorders.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the incidence of perianal fistulas, that condition is really not that common. I mean, it's something we occasionally see in the clinics in certain breeds, particularly German Shepherds and a few others, but it really, to me, is not a major health reason to neuter an animal because we might get a small reduction in a condition that's so very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other condition, which, of course, you mentioned, is the testicular cancer. And the fact of the matter is about that is that most testicular cancers, you know, about 50% are benign, and I believe 50% can be malignant, but they're very rare, and, again, a lot of them are benign, and even the ones that are malignant, like what are called their Sertoli cell tumors, tend to be more local. They don't tend to spread to other areas of the body. So, again, not something that seems to be shortening the life of dogs.
You know, I just read that in an article this morning about that there is a very low rate of metastasis, and so that even though it can be a common thing for dogs, for intact dogs to develop, the prognosis is usually pretty good.
That's right. So most of those things you mentioned are either treatable or very, very rare.
So,
and then, you know, on the flip side of it, of course, you know, in reviewing all the literature, so you have those three or four positive health benefits potentially, and I believe, you know, it's less than 1% animals dying of testicular cancer. But on the negative side, there's a quite longer list of you know, documented potential negative health effects.
Okay. Other than the pediatric spay and neuter, now we're working with males and females that are commonly spayed or neutered at 6 months of age. Does the risk still continue for those dogs, or does it decrease in those dogs? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that, you know, the evidence, what they've looked at is the studies that I've looked at animals, you know, that are neutered at a year or at sexual maturity between 12 and 15 months of age. In other words, when the what are called growth plates finally close. And in those animals, you do see the health benefits of less bone cancer, less, you know, bladder cancer, less, there's a very malignant type of cancer called hemangiosarcoma, which can be a very deadly disease, that neutering and spaying, waiting until they're 12 months of age, 12 to 15 months of age, does have a benefit. In fact, there was even a recent publication, I believe, that was even put it in DBM magazine, a very traditional, you know, protocol that, you know, even that animals, and they looked at Rottweilers, this was a veterinarian, Dr. David Waters from, again, Purdue, that actually non-spayed animals lived 30% longer when they looked at both, you know, Rottweilers, and they were looking at humans as well in terms of, you know, loss of sex hormone production. So I think the six-month cutoff is one of those arbitrary, you know, timelines that really is just that, just arbitrary, just like the old yearly vaccine cutoff was an arbitrary cutoff we used.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. Now, I know your specialty is not with behavior, and I do see behavior every day, unfortunately. In your practice, how often do you see an intact male dog, let's say from 6 months to a year, whose behavior starts to be very problematic? Do you then suggest to the owner that neutering that male dog would be beneficial?
Well, there are a lot of factors involved with aggression, as you as a trainer can appreciate, from hormonal being just one, and I'll say small factor, to other issues, including even the topic we discussed last time, vaccinations. As a homeopathic veterinarian, I see animals who become much more aggressive sometimes following rabies vaccine. You know, that's just an example. So I think and actually also looking at a study that my alma mater, Penn, did, they actually showed that neutered animals had a higher incidence of aggression than non-neutered animals. In fact, if you spend a day at the Penn Behavioral Clinic where they treat plenty of dominance and alpha-aggressive dogs, most of those animals have been neutered at the standard of standard ages. So I don't think, Rini, the answer is, you know, again, a one-shot-fits-all approach. I think it's a mixed bag. I've seen, you know, again, occasional benefits to neutering, but in other individual animals, I've seen aggression worsen. And as I said, one study at Penn actually even demonstrated that.
There was a lot of talk on discussion lists that I'm always on, and we have some veterinary behaviorists who join our discussions. And there was a lot of discussion at one point that if a female is already starting to show aggression before she's spayed, that it might be beneficial not to spay that female, possibly because we're removing the only soft hormone that she has, and that would be the estrogen, correct? Or am I not correct?
No, yeah, that makes sense to me. That's, you know, what you just told me was a new piece of information I wasn't aware of, but even from a homeopathic perspective, just to kind of throw that in there, is that if an animal already is imbalanced on the mental-emotional level, which is a deeper level of disease in the body, as we would say in homeopathy, than a physical level where you're dealing with skin or surface symptoms, if they already have that, and then you're removing, you know, internal organs, in other words, we call that in homeopathy suppressing the patient, removing a body part or removing a symptom, you're removing something, you can actually see a deepening or a worsening of a pre-existing disease on a deeper level. So that's not surprising to me that a animal already showing aggressive tendencies, if they were spayed or neutered, you know, would actually get worse. Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's go back to talking about females for a minute. If we spay females, are there any specific health risks or benefits, and at what age would you recommend that females be spayed?
Well, with females, there are, you know, obviously there are two conditions that I've actually, you know, that we can say that we've seen, you know, some significant health benefit. And one, of course, which is the big one that people will talk about, would be breast cancer. And with breast tumors or mammary tumors, as they're known, they're the most common malignant tumor in female dogs. And so, yes, spaying them early does have a propensity to decrease the incidence of that tumor. Mm-hmm. However, again, if you do it before 2.5 years of age, that will greatly reduce the risk of mammary tumors. So in other words, there's still health benefits, and again, you prevent also the other problems that I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, so definitely I recommend, you know, considering spaying a female dog, but actually waiting until they're, you know, at least a year of age, if not 2 to 2.5 years of age.
I met a couple boxers a few weeks ago that I was asked to do an assessment on from Boxer Rescue. To me, it looked like they had mammary tumors. Was I correct? I mean, do male dogs, can they develop mammary tumors?
Oh, yes. Male dogs absolutely can develop mammary tumors. You know, males, humans, as well as other mammalian species do have mammary glands, do have breasts, so to speak. They're just not as well developed,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Unless one happens to be overweight, then they'll be more prominent because some of us gain weight around that area. But, yes, males as well as females do have, you know, mammary tissue, absolutely.
The interesting thing was these male dogs were rescued from a puppy mill. They were both about 9 years old, and they hadn't even been neutered yet. So isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. And the thing about boxers, unfortunately, to understand with them is as a breed, even though they're, you know, such wonderful dogs, as a breed, they are unfortunately prone genetically to tumors and things. And if you throw in all the other things that we won't get into today, that mm-hmm. we either went into last time or might do in a future mm-hmm. interview, things like overuse of pesticides and vaccinations to a breed that's predisposed to tumors and cancers, you know, it's rarely you can, you know, you have to add all those factors up when you're looking at things like tumors and cancers.
Yeah. I would love for you to give a description and a definition of a condition called pyometria. What is it?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's the other major benefit of spaying a female dog. A pyometria, what that is an abscess or literally an infection, a walled-off infection of the uterus of a female dog. It typically develops after a period of repetitive heat cycles. We believe that the cause is involved with probably oversensitivity to progesterone as the animal goes through different cycles. And typically this infection or abscess will develop during the time of the heat period when progesterone is the highest hormone level. In other words, when they're not in heat, the period like a month or two after they're in heat. And there is a small portion of dogs that will develop at some point in life, if they're not spayed, an abscessed uterus or an infected uterus. And that's something that can potentially be a surgical emergency, that an animal might need to be rushed to an emergency clinic, and because they can become what we call septic, where a bacterial infection gets in the bloodstream, the uterus can rupture. And it's not one that unfortunately responds simply to antibiotic therapy. It's one where you usually need to do, dramatic surgical therapy. Or if you're a few of my very experienced homeopathic colleagues, you know, who've treated these with homeopathy, you know, that is another option of treatment. But typically, you know, most of the time those animals do need to be taken to surgery.
Okay. And would pyometria develop with many of the breeding dogs that are found at puppy mills, or even a good breeder who just continues to breed their dog maybe once or twice a year? Could she also develop pyometria?
Yeah, any dog, any female who goes through those repetitive cycles, you know, which occur twice a year, typically in most dogs, you know, where there's, you know, cycles of estrogen and progesterone, can potentially develop, this pyometria. However, once again, Rini, as a holistic vet, I want to stress to your, you know, listening public that, you know, there are many other factors. In fact, my clients who feed a minimally processed or fresh meat-based diet, those that vaccinate less, those that use less pesticides, those are my clients. I don't see these type of diseases, and it's just very, very rare.
Mm. Well, that's good news if it's rare.
I mean, it's rare when they're kept well holistically. You know, I see in the conventional clinic that I work out of, you know, certainly, you know, a fair share of, you know, breast tumors and pyometrias, and I look at the health records of those animals as a holistic vet would tend to,
mm-hmm.
and typically I find these are the animals that tend to be less healthy in terms of their medical history. They tend to have a lot of health, you know, minor or chronic immune issues, and they also tend to be, like I said, over-vaccinated or over-pesticided, as I would say, and all of those factors, I think, weaken the immune system and make us more prone to whether it's an abscessed uterus or cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about the incidence of hypothyroidism? Can that be a result of early spay or neutering?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, one of the scientific studies documented actually shows that neutering male dogs or spaying female dogs actually triples the risk of hypothyroidism in dogs.
No matter what age they're done.
Really? And so, you see, whenever, that's the other thing I want to bring into the point, and, you know, how the body works as a whole, not in parts. I mean, our whole endocrine system is all interconnected, and to think that we can just, you know, remove one part of it and think that we're not going to affect the adrenal glands or the pituitary gland or the thyroid or the or those kind of glands is ridiculous, mm-hmm. and or the pancreas, another gland. So whenever you remove sex hormones, there's always going to be an effect on these other organs because the body works together. The endocrine system works as a functioning whole unit, not as, you know, parts connected like in a car.
Mm. That's a great way. I love when you make analogies like that because that's really what it is. We have parts and we need to work with the whole being, you know?
Yeah, well, the parts are there, but there's a governing essence or there's a governing function of the parts that work together that, you know, conventional medicine can't explain by the parts. That's where, you know, we look at in holistic medicine. And in other words, we look at the consequences of removing one part on the rest of the organism because they all are interrelated. We're not, the parts of our body don't function in isolation or separatism. They function as a whole, as a unit. That's what holistic medicine really is.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
What in your homeopathic practice and also when you are working with traditional medicine, What is the incidence that you see of hypothyroidism?
I can't even give you a percentage. It is the most common. I don't have that information handy right off the top of my head, but it is the most common hormonal disorder in dogs. Mm-hmm. I believe it's way overdiagnosed. That's one thing I want to add, because a lot of veterinarians rely on what's called a single T4, which that's a one measure of thyroid hormone. So I think it's overdiagnosed by a lot of my colleagues, and a lot of animals end up on thyroid medicine unnecessarily, which can be just as drastic as not diagnosing it. In other words, putting a hormone into the body that they may not need.
Right.
So it's important that any veterinarian who diagnoses his hypothyroidism actually looks at all of the thyroid parameters, what's called T3, TSH, thyroid autoantibodies. And if you look at all of those things, I don't think it's as common as it is out there. And so many of my, you know, so many clients who I see on the street or come into my practice or are on thyroid medicine, when I look at the original tests, I say, boy, this isn't a dog I would have put on thyroid medication. It was based upon just one value.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't based upon the complete thyroid profile. Again, stressing the importance of looking at all of the measures in a patient, not just one hormone measurement.
I wonder with cats also. I had a cat that developed, at age 14, she developed hyperthyroidism.
Right.
It was almost at the same time that I developed hyperthyroidism. She was a spayed cat, and I guess you could call me spayed too. I had a hysterectomy in my 30s. Would that have been related, or would you attribute something like that happening at the same time to the environment?
So hyperthyroidism in cats, we actually, just to briefly comment on that, is a little bit of a different situation than dogs. It is an autoimmune disease like a lot of other hormonal disorders and the tendency is for cats to develop these little nodules or goiters of their thyroid glands. In cats, we now recognize that what the leading factors are in causing hyperthyroidism are more environmental, and I include vaccines in that. We're now looking at, you know, certain linings of certain canned foods in cats, certain chemicals used in carpets. There is increasing evidence that there are environmental factors as well as emotional stress and grief. The thyroid gland is a big weak spot in certain people and animals that are experiencing a lot of stress or grief. They'll often develop an overactive thyroid gland. I believe these environmental factors and emotional stress probably play more of a role in the cat illnesses and possibly in people as well than mm-hmm. perhaps in dogs.
Right. I have in my 9 years of working with dogs seen several, but not, I mean, I don't even know how to define it. Once in a while, I would say that I meet a spayed female who, I mean, I get a call from the owner telling me that their female, you know, is now peeing all over the house, and she used to be house trained, and now all of a sudden she's not, and she's very stubborn and willful and all of this stuff. And then after talking with the owner and after sending the owner for a wellness exam, the diagnosis comes back as spay incontinence. How often do you see this?
Well, actually, the studies on that show a varied incidence between, you know, somewhere, depending upon who you read, between 5 and 20%, that's pretty high,
that is,
of female dogs who are spayed will at some point develop incontinence. And I've seen it, Rini, actually, even in young puppies after they're spayed, you know, where all of a sudden, a few weeks later, they're already leaking urine. So the time that this can develop can be anywhere from a few weeks after a spay to months or years later. So, but it is quite a high incidence, and certainly estrogen and other sex hormones do play a role in muscle tone around the urethra, both in the male and the female to some degree, I mean to a large degree. And yes, definitely, you know, spaying at any age can increase the risk of incontinence, which, you know, acknowledgingly can, you know, usually be treated, whether conventionally or, again, holistically, depending upon an individual's preference.
Can a male become incontinent?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
But I don't see that very often, do you?
It's not as common, but as I said, with females, we see it a little bit more. But I've made in my, you know, in the conventional side of practice, a prescription of a drug called phenylpropanolamine, or proin as it's known, mm-hmm. in a few males over the years as well. So, yeah, it can occur in them, too.
Wow, that's good to know. So then I can help owners and send them to the vet, too.
Right. Well, you want to make sure it's not anything else, of course, medical, like a urinary tract infection or you know, obviously
correct.
A hormonal condition like diabetes or Cushing's and, you know, or kidney disease. So that's why it's important to send them to the veterinarian.
Right, sure. So how can owners make a good decision? I mean, we can't treat dogs like they're cookie cutters. Not everything is good for every dog, correct?
That's right.
And so how would you help the owner decide what is best for their dog if somebody comes to you and says, you know, I don't want to breed, but suppose they say, I don't want to breed, I don't want, you know, my male escaping the house to go breed with another female, and the dog is like 6 months old. Would you try to convince the owner?
This is a golden rule in my practice, and I give the clients all the information. I have several articles that I hand out, you know, providing balanced, you know, information on both sides of the issue. And I tell them strongly that I feel that they should wait until they're at least 12 to 15 months to neuter or spay their animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel there's enough health benefits, you know, to do that. You know, we talked earlier about the behavioral argument. I will say, on the defense of our wonderful, you know, humane societies and shelters throughout the country, that they are unfortunately dealing with a different population, as we, you know, didn't really get into. They're dealing with so many homeless animals and unwanted animals that, you know, they're spaying and neutering them earlier. So those animals, Rini, are looked at more in a herd level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more like herd health, like you're dealing with a herd of cattle or a herd of sheep. And, you know, people who bring their companion animals to us, their dogs and cats, that's their children in mm-hmm. a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some cases it is their children. They don't have two-legged children. And so for the individual pet, definitely waiting till that 12 to 15-month period, minimally, would be what I would suggest.
Okay, I'll have to keep that in mind. Before we sign off for today, unfortunately our time is almost up, can you please tell people where they can contact you and get more information from you about your homeopathic practice?
Okay, yeah, the best way to contact me, well, I do have a website, which is, well, actually probably the best or easiest way is by phone, which is 856-629-8375, and I also have an email address, which is homeopathicvet. It's homeopathicvet@juno.com, J-U-N-O, or better yet, my office phone number, my appointment line, which is 856-629-8375.
Thank you, Dr. Dam. You're always wonderful to talk to. I always get some benefits from talking with you, and I hope we have a lot of listeners tuning in today, and they have to make up their minds. They have to talk to their vets.
As
and they have to make good
the job,
decisions.
Of giving them the information to make an informed decision.
Right. Exactly. That's what we're all about.
That's what it's all about.
Thank you so much.
Right,
I hope you have a great day, and we'll make up another appointment soon to talk on the radio.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you, listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's topic. I hope that it was educational for you. I always learn something when we have these interviews, so it's certainly beneficial to me also. Please tune in again next week, and I promise we'll have another interesting program on Thursday in the Doghouse from 10 to 10:30. Talk to you later.